From public safety to public money, affordable housing, infrastructure, and more. Just ahead, a look at what Jacksonville city leaders have planned for 2019. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5 for First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, Jacksonville City Council President Aaron Bowman is in studio and taking your calls. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later in the hour, the big band sounds of Crescendo Amelia, just in time for the holidays. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, from public safety to the public's dollars, the Jacksonville City Council tonight meets for the final time this year, and they have a packed agenda of measures to look at and pass and also strategic imperatives for 2019. There is a lot to discuss. What can we expect? Well, this morning, we're pleased to welcome the leader of this body. Jacksonville City Council President Aaron Bowman joins us now with a look ahead to what's on tap for the city over the next year. President Bowman, a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Melissa. It's great to be here as well.
Lots to discuss with Aaron Bowman. He is the current president of the Jacksonville City Council. What are your questions and comments? Give us a call. What's going on in your neighborhood? What are your questions about public safety? How tax dollars are being spent? Lots on the agenda. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Comments already coming in on our Facebook page. We'll get to those in just a minute as well. All right. So you have the final meeting of the City Council this year tonight, then a well-deserved holiday break. But before you get to that, there's a lot on the agenda, beginning with looking at the budget in terms of healthcare for public safety, the Hart Bridge money, ramps to pull down those ramps coming off the Hart Bridge, and much more. What are your top priorities, President Bowman, as you look at all of these measures before this body?
Well, thank you. My top thing that I wanted to accomplish in my year as president is this is our 50th year, and every year we've had a president come in with a new idea. So I took a step backwards and said, let's have a strategic plan. And so early on, we met and we laid out 1, 3, and 5-year objectives. And got almost all the council participating in that. And really, it's a focus. I remember when I first came on to council, I said, what are we doing? And they said, we got to wait till the new president comes in to find out. And so what I want to do is we've got a big turnover coming next summer with a lot of new council members, and I want them to come in and know what the council is trying to do.
What is your biggest priority?
Oh, gosh, we've got about 11 or 12 items on the 1, 3, and 5-year plans. Personally, I think things that are very important for me are public safety and crime reduction. Homelessness and affordable housing are right up there as well. And of course, I think also something that we know that Matthew and Irma showed us is that we need to be a little more resilient on
resiliency.
Resiliency for the city.
Let's go through these one by one, beginning with public safety. We continue to lead the state in murders. Violent crime is ticking up. Despite increased budgets, which the city council has, of course, signed off on for police. So what should Jacksonville be doing differently in order to meaningfully address this issue, which just does not seem to be showing any signs of improvement?
It is. And you're right. We've worked very hard on getting funding to take care of crime that happens. And now we got to start working backwards. And so what we're creating is a task force on public safety and crime reduction. That legislation is going through right now. It's got 46 people, someone from every district in the city, all organizations, and they'll be the eyes and ears of the city to tell us where we need to focus and what we need to do.
How will that be different from an effort that was mounted under a few administrations ago, John Payton, when he was mayor, the Jacksonville Journey, which really took a citywide task force approach to try to get at the root causes of crime? How will this be different?
I think a couple things. I think the involvement of all the people is very important on this, and we'll have plenty of subcommittees, but this is led by a civilian, not an elected official. But a few things that I want to focus on that I gave them for subcommittees are training programs, for one. We know where there's poverty, there's crime. So with this unemployment rate of 3.5%, there's a real opportunity to give soft skills and hard skills to people so they have a job, so they don't have to think that they have to commit crimes. I think business involvement is very important. We don't have a whole lot of business involvement right now. Back in the Jacksonville Journey days, business came in real strong. They're not there anymore. We need them in with both their people and financially. I think we need a boots on the ground in the neighborhoods where people feel safe walking around. They know what's going on in their neighborhoods, and they want to be involved.
Now, you also mentioned homelessness and affordable housing. It's cold right now. Pictures are popping up on social media of homeless people sleeping in tents downtown, right near homeless shelters, by the way. And so this is an issue that is also, like our crime problem, one that has stubbornly resisted efforts to ameliorate it. Although the housing first approach some nonprofits are taking now, like Ability Housing and Changing Homelessness, they've had some success, particularly with housing veterans. As a veteran, what are your thoughts about expanding that to the civilian population?
Oh, I think we have to. I was involved a couple months ago going out on the streets and talking to homeless people and finding out their story. It was an incredible experience, and I learned a lot and really started to understand the problem. And that's why I'm really pleased that you'll see we're going to have a soft opening tomorrow of an urban rest stop at Sulzbacher Center. And that'll be a place where people can go to do their laundry, get a shower, to get counseling, to get some food, and to help them. What I discovered when I talked to people on the streets that were living on the streets of why they weren't in shelters is they didn't feel comfortable being with a big group. If you gave them four walls around them, I think every one of them would say, absolutely, I'm all in. So that's why the other piece I think is very important is affordable housing, is that we can find places for people to live that they can live on with the amount of money that they have coming in. We'll make a huge progress.
And how will we fund an initiative like that? With we've got, I think, about a permanent population of a couple thousand homeless people in this city between downtown and the beaches.
There's some pretty good work going on right now by Ability Housing. They had a great brief last week and I'll be honest with you, a lot of it's philanthropy and businesses getting involved. Yesterday, the delegation was here, and I asked our representatives at the state level to help identify funding sources where we can work on that. So it's going to require a long time looking everywhere we can.
And then the other point you mentioned as a priority as city council president is making Jacksonville a more resilient city. How are we going to go about that? We do not have a climate action plan, a mitigation plan that I know of, for dealing with rising sea levels, greater storm surges, more extreme weather, wildfires, all of the ills associated with a warming planet. And we are a coastal city. And so I'm curious to ask you, how big of a priority will this be for you and your colleagues going forward? Because we actually have people waiting on hold on the phone that want to ask you the same thing.
Sure. I mean, it's a great question. And we can either address it or put our heads in the sand. And I think a couple things that we're doing right now that we're kicking off is we're going to have a work group that's going to involve the administration and city council and some people out in town that are going to look at resiliency. What do we need to do? We've also got an adaptive plan that's a state requirement that will kick off in January. And we're going to have people like the Riverkeeper and environmentalists on that. So I think what we've got to do is look at several things. Number one, where are we building and what are we subjecting construction on in our coastal environment? And then two, what do we need to do as a city to try to improve if we have an event coming in, it's a one-time event, or is the long-term sea rise thing going to continue to get worse and put us in extremis? So those are two groups that are going to kick off early next year.
Okay, we'll continue to talk about that and much more and go to your calls for Jacksonville City Council President Aaron Bowman. What are your comments and questions? It's 549-2937. Let's go to Dan in Atlantic Beach. Dan, I think President Bowman kind of answered your question, but go ahead. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, thank you. That was my question. I was interested in understanding what the city of Jacksonville has in place to address the rising seas. And I guess in conjunction with that, it seems as if many other cities in the state of Florida, from what I understand, have already taken action. Is the city looking at best practices statewide? Are we working in collaboration with other coastal cities to put effects into place, or is this something that we're doing independently?
Great question. You know, in South Florida, multiple counties are part of what's known as the Southeast Florida Regional Climate Compact, where they work in a bipartisan fashion on mitigation and adaptation measures, resiliency and sustainability measures, because down there, they're already getting regular sunny day flooding. The water's already coming in down there. So what's happening down there is going to eventually make its way up here. So what about that? Should we be looking to other cities, other municipalities for guidance?
Absolutely, we should. You know, with my Navy background, I can tell you we started looking at this when I was at Mayport, and we ran the numbers and saw where we're going to be in 50 years, and it's a little scary. One thing I've already done is I've reached out to the Netherlands, and they have offered to help and come in and be a part of this. So I would say right now I don't have any of the answers, but I certainly think that if we can use what's already in place and take ideas that have already started to work, that only makes sense.
That's fascinating to hear, because I've read that Miami and Broward County have also reached out to officials in the Netherlands for help, because they are perhaps the most knowledgeable people on earth in terms of living with water, figuring out how to move water around, keep water out, how to keep water from ruining lives and destroying homes and businesses. And so will they be part of this task force effort that you're putting together, officials from the Netherlands?
They, with the communication I had so far, they certainly want to help us. We haven't gotten as far as saying what that will entail, but certainly I hope at the very least they'll come and participate in some of our meetings, and we'll see where it goes from there.
It's 549-2937 if you're just tuning in as we talk with Jacksonville City Council President Aaron Bowman. Lots of comments on Facebook. Here's one from Elizabeth. Supporting public education and investing in programming that will support children's social and emotional needs would go a long way towards securing this community's future. Okay, so that gets us back to public safety. And how do you see the Kids Hope Alliance and other children's agencies factoring into how we become safer, how we reduce crime rates in Jacksonville and Duval County?
Great question, great point. And you know, I was fortunate. I grew up with two parents that pushed me back in line when I needed it. And another thing that's going to be a part of the safety and crime safety task force is going to be a mentoring program. I think that if you've got a single parent home, if you've got parents that are working multiple jobs, you're being raised by grandparents, you really need somebody that can help you, show you a path and get you along the way. So that'll be a part of it. The other thing we did is we did a mini grant program. We started that just a couple months ago. Kids Hope Alliance is administering it, but a lot of small organizations within the city said, hey, we can't compete for these big grants, but we're right there at the ground level. We know who these kids are that need help, but we just need some funding. So we established mini grants up to $10,000. Those have been awarded now. And if those are successful, we'll go ahead and increase that in the future. And the Kids Hope Alliance is really starting to take off now. We've got a solid leader there, a solid staff, and their focus is to take these young men and women before they get off the wrong step and make sure they've got a good future.
Let me ask you about some other priorities. Tonight, you'll take up a measure involving funding to remove the off-ramps from the Hart Bridge that lead into the sports complex. This has long been a priority of Mayor Lenny Curry's administration. It looks like it's now going to happen, that the money's going to be there. We'll see those ramps come down and that whole Bay Street corridor likely transformed. How important do you see this whole multi-phase development is being for Jacksonville?
Boy, I think it's one of the most important things we've got going on right now. The off-ramps were the elevated expressway is a great idea when it's built. It was very much an industrial area there. A lot of maintenance goes into keeping those things in good shape, and the traffic count on them is not very high. we've talked to a lot of different developers about what we need to do in developing that area over there, and pretty much all of them without fail said, well, you got to get that thing down. It blocks the view, it prevents access, it's taking up precious space that you can use. So I think getting them down and making and also it enables the autonomous vehicle concepts that JTA is working on right now. I think it's very important to get that whole area developed.
That the JTA wants to do self-driving cars, basically, so that people can take the Skyway and then get in a self-driving car to go that last little bit toward the stadium. And then Shad Khan has, of course, ambitious plans to develop the area around the stadium. And that is something that we're watching actually pretty closely here at WJCT, since it's right across the street from us. What would you say to those who've watched these plans roll out and they would prefer that the city council spend public money on other priorities? You know, all the other social ills that we've been discussing.
Well, I would say that you got to think in the big scheme of things that everything we do, we look at the return on investment. So, yes, where city funding could be going to those projects, the taxes and the money that's coming in because of those projects always exceeds what we're putting out.
You see it as a worthwhile return on investment.
I do. I have the job that keeps me traveling across the country and across the world. So I've visited some of what we all call great cities, and I think Jacksonville can be that.
And if you're just tuning in right now, we're speaking with Jacksonville City Council President Aaron Bowman. The Jacksonville City Council meets tonight, its final meeting of 2018, and then they'll take a break. So this is your last chance to connect with him before we go into the new year. It's 549-2937 to join us. Okay, let me ask you about a couple of little issues that popped up over the last few weeks, and I know you've been asked about them. There was an attempt to improve transparency on the city council by one of your colleagues, former Jacksonville City Council President Anna Brochet. That measure was defeated. At the same time, there's been controversy about the city accepting a $2.7 million grant from the United Arab Emirates, which has a shoddy human rights record. This money is going to go toward post-Hurricane Irma reconstruction. What's your response to critics of those moves, downing the transparency bill and taking the money from the UAE?
Let's talk transparency. I will tell your audience that Jacksonville has probably the strongest ethics rules in the state, and the state has some of the strongest ethics laws in the country. The bill was voted down 16-13, and I think if people think that transparency, any bill with transparency is a good bill, then they really should have read what it was trying to do and where it came from. I will say also that you'll see on the agenda tonight that I'm making some upgrades to working with the ethics officer, Carla Miller, to improve our ethics program. So I think we've got a pretty good group of folks over there that are living in the rules and are really trying to represent all the constituents fairly.
So you didn't see the transparency measures that were in that whole package, making text messages public as necessary, and some of the other prongs of it?
I think what I saw in that is we did have a transparency task force. And their recommendations really weren't what that bill was about. So, there was probably some pieces in there that we would have been good. But as a whole, and the recommendation from many council members is let's start over. Unfortunately, it got pushed through, and it means it's going to sit there for a year without being worked on.
Okay. And then the UAE money, there was an effort to turn down that money. That also failed.
It did, and I felt very strongly about that one. Being a military person and knowing how the world interacts and how important UAE is to our international efforts, we've got 5,000 service members stationed over there. We've got 60,000 civilians in UAE, so they are our ally. We work very closely with them. And then for them to come in, and I think they spent about $70 billion across the world over the last 20, 30 years to help. And they've come to the United States on multiple hurricanes and offered to help. And even in the state of Florida for for Irma. I think it was a little over $10 million. And so that's going to people that really need it in areas that really got hit hard.
At the same time, critics of the move say it's a way for the UAE to sort of do PR spin on its bad actions, its terrible human rights record. It's a way to polish up its international image. What do you say to that criticism?
I will say that I had the fortune to meet the ambassador when he's down here, and it's sincere. They really view that they know they're a wealthy nation, and they want to help. So they did it with all sincerity, and I don't think you can buy yourself favoritism.
All right, let's go to Amy in Riverside. Amy, good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay, go ahead.
So my question for Councilman Bowman is, when he talks about ROI and comparing the ROI on taking out the ramps to the Heart Expressway versus investing in the preventative measures that would stop crime at its roots by addressing poverty, I just wonder whose ROI he's talking about, because I don't think it's mine. I don't think it's most working people in Jacksonville who are going to benefit from that. I think Shad Khan's going to benefit from it. So hallelujah, he's getting corporate welfare while the rest of us are, you know, scrambling. People are freezing to death on the streets. And we just keep throwing police at crime, which does nothing to actually prevent it.
Okay, I get your point, Amy. And so I'm sure this isn't a criticism that you've heard before. You've heard this before. Is Shad Khan getting corporate welfare and too much largesse at the expense of working and poor people in this town?
I guess my response to that would be is, how does anybody think this city is funded? It's funded primarily by taxes coming in on property, and you're going to have billions of dollars invested in that area. They're going to generate millions and millions and millions of tax dollars. So if we want the city to grow, we've got to be willing to invest in the city. And the more we invest in the city, the more it grows and the more tax revenue that comes in so we can do these things.
Here's a related question for you. It's a tweet from Jason. Are we ever going to raise our millage rate, speaking of property taxes, or will we keep shortchanging our schools, infrastructure, and vital services? Jacksonville has been held up as an extremely low-tax city in the region as compared to other similarly sized cities, particularly cities around Florida. We're a lower millage rate city. Critics say that there's just not enough money in the public purse to fund the kind of quality of life measures that people have been coming to about this morning. So what about that?
A couple things. Number one, we do not control the millage rate for schools. So that is out of our purview. It's controlled to state level. So I'll leave that part out of the conversation. I think it's incumbent upon your city leaders to give you value. And so what we're doing right now is identifying everything we can that is not money well spent. And at the same point in time, we're seeing an incredible boom in property values right now going up that are generating more money. And then the Pension Reform Act that we did, we're putting hundreds of millions of dollars right now into capital investment programs that we haven't done for years and years and years. So we're on a good trajectory, and I personally don't think that we're in a place right now that we need to raise millage rates. But, you know, a council did that a few years ago when they had to, when times were bad. So we look at it every year. We see how we are and what we need to do. And right now we feel pretty comfortable where we are.
Jacksonville City Council President Aaron Bowman. Again, the final meeting of the council for 2018 is tonight. And that is open to the public, by the way. And thank you, public, for connecting with us this morning. President Bowman, happy holidays and thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much. And we'll be happy to have everybody downtown at 5 o'clock tonight.
I'm sure you say that with an interesting smile. I hope it's a very happy and productive meeting. They can sometimes be long and intense. So let's hope for a positive meeting.
Well, if I can, Melissa, real quickly, at 4 o'clock, I don't think we've ever done this before. We're having an ugly sweater contest. So,
are you going to be wearing one?
I absolutely will.
Now that is Instagram worthy.
So you'll see some pictures from council members, from our ECAs, and from council staff tonight, and we'll see who wins.
Oh man, that should be interesting. Don't miss that, everybody. Okay, much more still ahead later on the show. The retro swing of Crescendo Amelia, some big band music for the season. But up next, it's our book club with some gift ideas for the bookworm in your life. We'll be right back.
End the 2018 Jaguar season on a high note. Treat yourself to a live jazz brunch on Sunday, December 16th from 10 a.m. to kickoff at WJCT Studios. Enjoy live music by Jaguar Jazz featuring saxophonist Tracy Morris and an eclectic brunch menu curated by celebrity Chef Cartel. Quench your pregame thirst with the Mimosa Fountain or select your own libation at the Cash Bar. For tickets and group seating, visit 904tix.com and search Jazz Brunch.
Join StoryCorps and WJCT for an evening of conversation and storytelling Thursday, December 13th at WJCT Studios, 6:30 p.m. reception with a presentation at 7. Meet the StoryCorps staff as they discuss storytelling and oral histories and why it is so important to preserve them today. Listen to real conversations collected during StoryCorps' Jacksonville visit. The event is free, but reservations are required. Go to wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, are you doing some holiday shopping? Maybe you've got a book lover in your life. Yes, a book. You know, that low-tech piece of media. Yes, books, actual books. We have lots of books here at WJCT. They come into us in the mail just about every day of the week. We have a little library, in fact, in one of our offices, because authors like public radio and book lovers like public radio. So that's why we're doing our book club right now on the show. And our book club leader, Stacy Goldring, has some very jolly ideas to add to your gift list for the book lover in your life. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. And, you know, my daughter wants books for Christmas, which was really exciting.
Oh, that's so gratifying.
Yeah.
Oh, I love hearing
that.
What'd
you bring with you?
I brought a whole bunch of interesting things with me this morning. So I'm thinking, my theme is like, who would you buy for, which probably isn't very good English, but if you want to support local, I found this wonderful book called 15 Views of Jacksonville, and it's edited by Caleb Michael Sarvis, and it's available at all the local bookstores, but it's 15 short stories written by local authors that take place here in Jacksonville. So this is a beautiful book, just mm-hmm. if you can hear that, it even sounds good. And I think it'd be a beautiful gift, and it really speaks to shopping and supporting our local authors and our local bookstores. If you want to go further afield for the book lover connoisseur, I suggest a subscription. There are two.
Really?
There are two sites in particular, although I'm sure our local bookstores would do this as well, where you can subscribe and you will get a book a month, a a book every other month. They will curate the theme for you, or you can select the theme. Oh, I love it too. And those two sites are Haywood Hill and Persephone Books. So it's haywoodhill.com. Hay is H-E-Y-W-O-O-D Hill. And Persephone Books, and I've spoken about them before, persephonebooks.cu.uk. These are beautiful books with beautiful end papers, etc. So for the real book lover. For the Harry Potter fan.
I've got one of those at home too.
Socks.
Yes.
They're everywhere.
Harry Potter socks.
And they're fabulous. So if you've already gone through the books and they have their wand and they have their all their other books that are related to Potter, the socks are really cute and fantastic. For the Bard fan, I suggest a Shakespearean insult chart. And you can find this online. And the chart is themed. It's really cute. And so I just thought that was so clever. Again, it's made in the USA. And it's just a beautiful little tribute to the Bard. And, you know, I kind of have a warped sense of humor. So I thought that was wonderful.
And by the way, all of her ideas and Stacy's wonderful book club universe is at her website, which is chapterendnotes.com. And mm-hmm. we also need to point out that San Marco Books and More, which is an amazing bookstore in the San Marco Square, is our sponsor of the First Coast Connect Book Club. And it's where you lead book club discussions every month. People come up to me all the time and say, I went to Stacy's book club because I heard her on the radio and Aww. She is so good.
Oh, that's so kind of you. You know, I love to talk about books. And I also love... I love anything small. And there's this thing now, and it's called miniature libraries. You can go online, or maybe you can find them locally, and they're these tiny little, like, boxes made out of cigar boxes or a little jewelry box, or it's kind of like paper dolls where you fold it and make it. And they're tiny little libraries with little books that you make. I love that.
Of course you do.
Well, I guess it sounds kind of nerdy when I say it out loud.
No.
But you can find these miniature libraries if you just Google it or go and ask at your local bookstore, and you'll find these for the book lover. Of course, for the hopeless romantic, a book that our book groups read this year, The Red Notebook by Antoine Lorraine is fantastic. If you like poetry... and you want something that is a little more spiritual for the season and gets in touch with the spiritual and nature, I suggest Mary Oliver's Devotions. It's a beautiful book.
All amazing lists.
Yes,
all amazing
yes.
recommendations. Mm-hmm. And are you doing a book club before we go to break this month at San Marco Books and More?
We had our book club.
Already had it.
But you go to chapterendnotes.com. I'm sorry, I have so many websites, I get a little confused. And you email me, you want to talk about a book, you want to find out. Our next book group will be discussing The Right Stuff in February by Tom Wolfe.
Very nice.
So I'm looking forward to that with the local Florida connection.
Very nice. And email Stacy at bookclub@wjct.org. Check her out too when she appears in person at San Marco Books and More. That's our sponsor for the book club. Always good to see you. Happy reading.
Happy reading.
And happy holidays. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. She is putting food and art together in today's Movable Feast, our look at dining and entertainment trends around town. Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance speaks with restaurateur and now gallery owner Ellen Cottrell.
Have a banana.
And you've had a wonderful career in Jacksonville with restaurants and the food industry, and you are reinventing yourself this year. Ellen, welcome. Tell us what you've done and where you're going.
Thanks, Lee. Well, as you know, we had Hobnob for a few years, and it was wonderful, wonderful experience. Having the restaurant was a little bit of a new experience for me, and it was great. I learned so much. And
where was Hobnob in Jacksonville?
Hobnob was a restaurant located in Unity Plaza in the Riverside area in Brooklyn. So now that it's closed, I went back to my art roots and started a project called Art Sales and Stories, where I've been interviewing different artists that I know all over Jacksonville and also in different cities and countries, actually, that I'm traveling to, and then featuring their art for sale on my website. I'm actually opening up another gallery, a brick and mortar gallery, and so I'll be showing their artwork there as well.
So this is a gallery where you can have events as well as
exactly.
Exhibit your art.
And that's the beauty of it. So I'm kind of doing that same model here. And I love it because it really gives me an opportunity to not only be involved with the art world, but also still keep my foot in the industry of,
food.
Events.
Food
and
is food. Art.
Exactly. And also nonprofit things. I'll be bringing back Generous Pours, which was a nonprofit, something that I started through Hobnob. Where
what
we would
was Generous Pours? What
Generous is it? Pours, we would pick a different local nonprofit every quarter and then have different happy hours or events throughout the city where a portion of that would go to that that nonprofit. So that's really where my heart is, be able to use the location also to have events to bring in funds and
this
awareness
is
for different nonprofits.
Great blend of all the things that you love: art, food, beverage, giving back to the
exactly.
community, and having parties.
Yeah, and I'm really blessed to have that opportunity. We are slated to open hopefully by November, so we can plan holiday parties, which is our goal.
Well, Ellen Cottrell, Art Sales and Stories. How unique and how wonderful. I cannot wait to get on your invite list. Thank you. Wonderful. Good luck with the art gallery.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining me on Movable Feast today.
Thank you for having me.
Our Movable Feast is sponsored by 927 Events and Catering. Well, local veteran and renowned speaker and educator Dan Nevins inspires audiences all over the world with his message of perseverance, resiliency, and hope. A highly decorated soldier, Dan was injured during combat in Iraq in 2004 after an IED detonated beneath his vehicle. Dan lost both legs below the knee, and he also lives with a traumatic brain injury and the emotional wounds of war. Now, Dan credits Wounded Warrior Project with his successful rehabilitation, and he works with them, but he's also become internationally famous for touting the power of yoga. He has taught yoga worldwide to audiences of hundreds, and this month he's leading a unique retreat for a very select and lucky group right here in our area. Dan Nevins joins us now with more about Warrior Spirit Retreat. Good morning.
Good morning. So great to be here.
It's so good to see you. And of course, you are globally famous. So I'm excited to have you on the show this morning. It's always good to have you and talk to you because what you've done is so extraordinary. You healed yourself with yoga and now you're taking it to other veterans like you. This is just such an incredibly spiritual practice and it's changed your life. So how do you see this helping the 12 veterans, soldiers that are going to come in this month and work with you?
Well, you're absolutely right in that the power of yoga is absolutely transformative. It has been in my life. And for me, I learned to physically deal with my wounds, like actually putting my legs on every day and learning what life was like and finding my new normal. But it was the invisible wounds that went sort of untreated. I learned to cope, but not to heal.
Yeah.
And so when I discovered a yoga practice and meditation practice, I actually learned to heal. And then, so for me now, it's like, okay, sort of like I found the cure to cancer. right? And the cancer of the Invisible Wounds Award. So now I have to share that with other warriors. So I've been leading these retreats to help warriors understand the transformational power of yoga and how that could work in their own lives. And then I also realized that they don't want to show up on a yoga mat and wear spandex and all the things that kept me out of a yoga studio. So
the macho stuff.
Yeah, totally. And I tie yoga to things that they're actually going to do again, to golf, to horsemanship, to nature, to things that where they can start to see, okay, this is what I learned on my yoga mat. This is what I learned in meditation. These are these practices that I've learned. And how can I take these practices into things that aren't necessarily inside of a yoga studio?
These are 12 wounded warriors from all over the country. You will lead them through 5 days of growth and transformation free of charge.
100% free. Yeah, I have a very small nonprofit. And I'm fortunate enough to have some great donors. And I myself am the largest donor to my nonprofit, as well as some corporate sponsors that say, like, hey, I think what you're doing is the right thing to do.
It's amazing because these 12 guys, it's all men?
No, the three
there's
women.
There's some
on
women. Okay. Mm-hmm. These 12 men and women were chosen out of thousands of people that wanted to come and be led and taught by you. What a testament to the kind of reputation you've made and the kind of impact you've had. You've really transformed a lot of lives.
Well, I mean, that's... I mean, I guess that's the bonus. It's the reward for me is that, you know, it's, I just mean it. Like when I show up and teach yoga, like I mean it. I gotten some notoriety out of it and teaching big classes and getting invited all over the world to teach yoga. And
you've taught at the White House, all kinds of places.
I have White House. I've been invited by the Department of Defense to teach overseas and downrange. I have been, teach in New York City where like almost 2,000 people show up to practice
in Bryant Square Park.
In Bryant
right?
Park, yeah, you got it. And it's great. And I teach yoga because I really am committed to sharing that practice with people, to share like what's possible for them. It's really not about me, even though I am fulfilled by doing it. It makes me feel good to show up and share a practice with people that I know will do nothing but good for them, no matter who they are. Because, you know, I teach warriors and that's my goal. That's my community. But in reality, all of us live with the invisible wounds of some war that we fight, whether it's family or upbringing, whatever. So if I can share that with anybody that shows up, I'm happy.
It is so healing. And I have experienced it myself. And wow, very lucky 12 people coming in for this retreat. It's not open to the public, but if you want to learn more about Dan's work, just go to his website, which is dannevins.com. And if you're very lucky, he will teach a class for you soon, because you do still do that sometimes.
Absolutely, I do.
Okay. It's so good to see you, and congratulations. It's really amazing to see the impact you've had from right here in Ponte Vedra, all over the world. He is Dan Nevins, Iraq vet, internationally famous yogi and nonprofit chief. Again, dannevins.com for more. And have a great time, Dan. Thanks so much for stopping by this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
And in a moment, the big band sounds of Crescendo Amelia. Just in time for the holidays. That's next.
On the next Fresh Air, some great new roots and rockabilly Christmas songs performed in our studio by their composer, J.D. McPherson, and his band. Their new Christmas album is called Socks. Join us. Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Marco Werman. After the atrocities of World War II, leaders from around the globe made a declaration, a universal declaration of human rights. Today, it's one of the foundations of the UN.
But the UN is not able to advance the ball in a lot of areas.
And some countries don't like being told what to do. Why some say human rights are taking a hit. Next time on The World, this afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Millions of women become pregnant in the U.S. each year. If they have a chronic health problem or become ill, it's often not clear how to handle their care.
Each doctor had a different opinion on what I could and could not be doing.
In part, that's because historically, pregnant women have been excluded from medical research. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Video games are not just kid stuff. Half of all adults say they play. The industry has doubled in value from 5 years ago. Some titles have big budgets and big profits that rival a Hollywood blockbuster. What could the future bring? Meet the game makers and game changers next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
And you're listening to the swinging sound of Crescendo Amelia Big Band. Yes, don't miss their big band sound coming up at two special shows this month. Here with more, show producer Dennis Negrin and lead singer Mara Lovequist. Hey, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Good morning. Let's begin with you, Dennis. This show coming up is called How the Big Band Stole Christmas. And this is a 20-piece set. Is that right?
Yeah.
A really big band.
Every year the show gets bigger and better. We have a 19-piece band, 11 singers. We had to count them again. Yeah. And 8 dancers. So it's a full theater production.
Oh, wow.
With all the stops.
Really old school, retro, big band. Like the whole presentation on stage. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're really, really lucky to have some of the most talented dancers, singers, and performers in the area.
Now, one of them is you, Mara Lovequist. You're lead singer for Crescendo Amelia Big Band. How'd you get involved with this?
Gosh, and I had to think about this just recently. I didn't know it had already been this long, but this is our 5th year doing this holiday show, and I came into the band a few months prior to that show, so it's already been 5 years. Frank Basile, who originally founded Crescendo, met up with him, and that's how I got started in the band, kind of on a whim.
And then it grew from there.
It snowballed from there.
You know, I think there's such a yearning for the kind of excitement of those days. Like when you go and see a show like that, or you watch an old movie where there's a big band in the movie and you see how they used to entertain an audience in a club. You watch that with such nostalgia. And so it's exciting that you're bringing this back for local audiences, especially at the holidays is when I think people really enjoy it.
Agreed. And I personally, I think a lot of people feel when it comes to music, seeing and hearing that real sound has such an effect.
Yeah, there's nothing like hearing it live with all the musicians in place. And Dennis, this is also a benefit concert for ReThreaded and Big Brothers, Big Sisters, so that's cool too. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we're really fortunate to be able to partner with people in the community. So one of the things we've done is partner with ReThreaded to offer some discounted seats to them. So there's going to be a big crowd there on the 14th. They're also going to have a pop-up shop on the 14th, which is going to be great. And both shows with Big Brothers and Big Sisters, we're going to allow all the littles to come for free with purchase of an adult ticket.
Now, should people dress in 1940s style clothes for this and really get into the spirit of it?
You are welcome to wear that. Absolutely.
Any dancing going to be going on?
Dancing will be on stage, and probably at the end, we'll all just come out on stage and just dance with you.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how to dance to, I don't know the 1940s dances, but people can fake it, right? People
kind
of get into it.
We have a ton.
You're going to show people.
A ton of great dancers who follow the group. They're really integral to our community and a lot of fun.
How much rehearsal goes into these shows? 19-piece set.
Ooh.
How much rehearsal time?
There's never enough time in a day for so many things, but there is a good bit of rehearsal that happens as soon as we can with this type of production. And with as large of a band, we do kind of separate it a little bit sometimes in sections. The rhythm will do their thing, the horns will do their thing, vocals will do their thing, and then we all come together for times and uh-huh. make sure it all meshes.
It all comes together. And that horn section, I'm sure, is just going to be amazing, along with your vocals. So we're going to close the show with a little more of Crescendo Amelia Big Band as they present How the Big Band Stole Christmas. The first show is Thursday night, December 14th, 7:30 p.m. at Theater Jacksonville in San Marco. Then next Thursday, the 21st, at Fernandina Beach Theater. Tickets and info at crescendoamelia.com. Mara, Dennis, get out there and swing, daddy-o.
Thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
I'm sure that was the wrong slang to use. But anyway, crescendoamelia.com. Thanks, guys. We're going to close with a little more of their big band sound. Have a great show. Have a great day. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, and fill a stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa baby. Baby, hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry tonight.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.